my city. Flickering dirty neon over alleys mean and dirty streets, while my neighborhood is torn down around me.
Hello, everybody. Yeah, it's Michael C. Rupert, Tracker of Truth. I made it back to you guys, and I have to tell you that I am so happy to be back with you guys. I have missed you guys. I have missed the show, and I very much wanted to connect. I'm sorry I could not be here last week. But on the way back from Sundance in the Black Hills of South Dakota, my aging 2000 Lincoln Continental developed a major transmission trouble outside of Denver up in the mountains, resulted in me and my friend Jesse Ray, who went with me to Sundance, being stranded. But thanks to an enormous network of friends, especially through the help of Facebook, which has proved itself to be amazingly valuable, we were not only picked up when we had no ride and no money, we were covered for a hotel room. We made some great connections and some great things happened. And as a result of that and making a post on Facebook this week, I'm happy to report that my July rent is paid. Even though my 2000 Lincoln is questionable, we are starting to raise a little money so that I can stay functioning with you guys, which taught a number of lessons. But first of all, before I go any further, just let me say an enormous thank you to everyone who responded to the Facebook messages last week, who rescued me literally and stepped up. I will not have time, as I usually do, to handwrite or connect with everyone who has responded. There's just too many things happening, but I want you to hear my deep gratitude for the love that I felt and the amazing comments that went up on Facebook. A lot of people wanted me to have urged me to undertake various business activities, and I won't do it. I just can't plug back into that anymore. I burned myself out on that. And I try to live pretty much like a medicine man. I don't charge for what I do. I get about $6,000 royalty a year. But people have wanted me, you know, to start up this and start up that. And yes, I probably will get a permanent URL for where people can make donations just to keep me eating. But this point came up very clearly about people suggesting, you know, well, why isn't RT hiring and why isn't? And I prefer not to take a paycheck from anybody because I own myself and because I'm independent. And the less engaged I can be with that system at all, the better. And it is more important for me now than ever to speak plainly and without any other influence on me and my work. Now I'm going to come to some amazing stuff came out of Sundance, and that weaves perfectly in with many important things that I have to tell you tonight. And I've been on fire to deliver a couple of messages that have come clear to me in the last week. For those of you who have been following me for a long time, the fast campers, the ones who understand the whole body of work, I think I'm going to offer you something tonight that's really going to resonate and indicates a major unveiling and a new status for us all. But let's just recap a little bit. In this last week, the floodwaters in India, horribly monsoonal rains in the Himalayan foothills of India have displaced 9 million people. 9 million. Helicopters were crashing on the way to rescue. They couldn't fly in. Bodies of human bodies and bodies of cattle and livestock are openly rotting, raising fears of typhus, diphtheria, dysentery, all of that. That's in India. But if you haven't been to Alaska lately, it's about 95 degrees in central Alaska right now. And if you're missing that, you can certainly go to where it's in the low 90s in the Arctic Siberia of Russia. Of course, the western U.S. is kind of melting. Major drought is underway. It is impossible to ignore the totality or the severity of climate change and the rapidity with which it is happening. The planet is running amok. We're all aware of that now. There's no more humps to cross with that. You can't miss it. But speaking of fires, as in forest fires caused by heat waves, and as in barbecue fires, but the following countries are up, and I mean up, all over the world, in case you have missed it. Well, I'm going to gloss over this briefly because I want to get to some of these critical insights that I had this week. Turkey, the people in Taksim Square continue to hold strong. We're still getting photographs of tens and hundreds of thousands of people in the streets. They have not given in. They have not yielded. They are holding strong against the Erdogan government. In Brazil, horribly violent clashes all over the country, primarily Sao Paulo, Rio, and other cities. But some amazing beauty in Brazil, with millions of people in the street. We saw some amazing clips this week of Brazilian police officers sitting down, taking off their helmets, sitting down with the protesters and switching sides. That is watershed, and that kind of is emblematic of so many things. Bulgaria, protests continue strong there. The Bulgarian people are standing tall in Colombia, in Russia, in Nicaragua, in Bahrain, in Tibet, in Palestine, in Indonesia, in Bosnia-Herzegovina, in Syria, in Lebanon, in Spain, in South Africa, in Iraq, a lot of violence in Iraq, in Tunisia, in Greece, in Israel, in Thailand, in Japan, in Chile, some very serious stuff happening in Santiago, in Mexico, Poland, Norway, in China, where the Chinese army massacred something like 128 Uyghur minorities in the Xinjiang province, in the western part of the country, just as the British would stoke the fires against Muslims in London, the Chinese engage in pogroms against Muslim Chinese, 128 massacred in Iran, in India, on top of the horrible weather in Pakistan, in Kosovo, in the Netherlands, Kashmir, Paraguay, Sweden, Peru, Hong Kong. Egypt is, of course, perhaps the biggest pool of gasoline, with millions in the street, violence reports coming in of people running over a Muslim Brotherhood center with shotguns. The army has been deployed in Cambodia, in Bangladesh, Slovenia, in Italy, tens of thousands turning out to protest unemployment. In Canada, protests against the Keystone XL pipeline and actually the seizure of some fracking equipment by the people of a local township. I'll get to that later. Successful protests in Canada, Hungary, Portugal, Germany, Australia, France, Ireland, where we've seen some amazing heroism out of a member of the Irish Parliament this week, in the United Kingdom and the U.S., and there was a credible story on RT showing that the British government is mobilizing for civil unrest, and they're turning off all the taps. It's going to be a theme tonight for everything else except for the military and state security. V for victory, V for vendetta, something like that. But the world, as you know, unless you are brain dead, is rising up because these are people now who have nothing left to lose, and there is a quickening moment. Now, this sets the stage for this amazing revelation that came to me on the way back from Sundance. And Sundance, for me, was, on one level, it's the best summer vacation I've ever had in my life. On another level, it was absolutely a perfectly clear demonstration of the power of spirit to impact the material world. That's the most beautiful way I can describe Sundance. I am not a committed four-year Sundancer, but I went and I was there for all 4 days of this beautiful Sundance on the Wild Horse Sanctuary in the southern Black Hills of South Dakota. It was the intercessor was Basil Braveheart, an amazing man, warrior, leader. The head dancers were Tom and Loretta Cook. And it was the Afraid of Bear American Horse dance. And it's an amazing dance. It's the dance to which where Russell Means danced his Sundance many years ago. Extremely powerful. And one where I danced many rounds in support, but I got to go have lunch, drink water, away from the dancers. I got to go sleep at night. They slept in teepees, but I saw people who are in much worse shape physically from an appearance standpoint than I am do the physically impossible, and that had to do with the music and the prayers and the sacred space laid out, the drumming, and the space that was held open for spirit to allow people to perform beautiful, beautiful acts. It was like a Shakespearean play, like a Midsummer Night's Dream, with wonderfully colorful costumes. The Sundance Tree was just one of the most beautiful things I've ever seen. And there was power there, and there were roughly 40 men and 40 women who danced for 4 days and without food or water. They would do rounds from 1 to 2 plus hours, very intense, nonstop movement, 4 to 5 rounds a day for the 4 days, no food, no water, and it's not possible to do that. And I saw sacrifices, but not sacrifices in the sense that you would think of them. I saw prayers. I saw acts of love. So anyway, short version of that. I can't spend the whole show on Sundance, but this sets up some really powerful stuff. So I'm hoping the old timers are really paying close attention now. Put your ears on. So Jesse Ray, my dear friend here from Crestone, who went with me, we go to the sweat lodges together and go to Native Indigenous medicine ceremonies and other spiritual ceremonies here. So we rode together. And we were in a hotel room, thankfully provided by one of my great friends and one of the on Facebook. And we were talking, and she says, you know, what we need to do is to get everybody all on one page. And boom, that hit me just like a ton of bricks. And then I said, any page. It doesn't make any difference. And that's what the change of consciousness is all about. And what I have been looking for over the course of the last year, 2 years, is, if you will, a unifying theme, or, if you will, when a conductor strikes a tuning fork, or the piano hits a middle C and the orchestra tunes to the middle C, we need that one issue. It has to be any one issue. But if at any time 7 billion people can get on one page, that will end everything. Now, how do we get 7 billion people on one page? Well, we find the 100th monkey, the 100th monkey that has to do with any of those pages, which will convert to a shift in human consciousness. And whether the issue is the horrendous corruption that has been exposed by Edward Snowden. Again, I say very, very clearly, none of which is new to any of us, but what is significant about this, and my friend Daniel Ellsberg was on a great interview with Philip TV, my friends Ty Ventura and Sean Stone, just within the last couple of days. And he summed it up perfectly, but what he said was, here it is in black and white. You don't have to prove anything. It is a clear prima facie case that the Constitution of the United States has been illegally usurped, has been overturned, that crimes have been committed. It's all right there in black and white in print. Nobody has to prove anything. The U.S. government can't deny it. And in that sense, Edward Snowden's actions, and I believe he's not acting alone, but they were nonetheless very good. But Edward Snowden is signaling, and I will talk more about this as we get deeper into the show. Edward Snowden is serving as a catalyst or a lightning rod for anti-American sentiment all over the globe. And it's going to be, I believe, enough. I believe the United States is going to get swarmed by the planet, and from the wilderness in 2002, 2003, 2004, I wrote about that heavily. It was inevitable that that time would come. So Snowden is one, maybe that's one page that everybody could get on. Maybe climate collapse is one page that everybody could get on. Maybe economic collapse how about political oppression? How about overt fascist totalitarianism is a page, any page, that the human race could get on. Now, so we cross a threshold, and whether it happens with the uprisings in so many countries that we're watching right now, and that are soon going, it's just the beginning of summer, whether it happens with that or over something else, once all 7 billion of us get on that one page, it's like striking that middle C so that the band can tune, the human band can tune. And the vision that I had with that, because the energy that stayed with me after Sundance was overpowering for about 4 days. It was an amazing place. I understand what it is to be between the worlds and to feel both. But what was given to me to see was the moment the human race gets on one page about anything, we will lose our fear. Fear is a frequency. And once you start tuning, some frequencies become flat or sharp. To taking this one step further and acknowledging all of the work that I've talked about over the last year in particle physics, showing that physical reality is a product of frequency. And my firm belief that the human race, and along with George Orwell and many others, has been enslaved for at least 5,300 years or so, and I think longer than that, as a matter of frequency and control. Now there are some. Now this is an analog. This is symbolic, but I think it's a very important observation. Many years ago, the frequency for middle C was changed from 432 hertz to 440 hertz. Now, using that just as a metaphor for the matrix, what if at 440 megahertz, all the other keys, of course, will tune to that middle C and around that middle C? That will determine the frequency vibration of every note in every piece of sheet music. What might happen if we tuned everything back to 432? I'm not saying that's the panacea magic bullet. I'm not wearing a tin hat here, but I think the metaphor is killer in helping us to understand some of what's going on. And we need to lose our fear, so we need to get on one page. So that's been a big, huge theme for me this week. This awareness that I've had a burning desire to share, and because if you've been with me for a long time, you know as well as I do right now that we done at the out of time place. And there is an amazing sense of urgency, an amazing sense of change. There's an amazing sense. I feel an awakening, and I'm hoping some of you do too. So let's go back to this issue about, let's play a song. I want to play a song. We've got two songs for you tonight. Now, going back to Taksim Square, and I'm just so grateful to and proud of the Turkish people and all of the peoples who are rising up all over the world right now and who are showing incredible courage and resilience and perseverance right now. And if you've been watching the stuff at Taksim, you certainly have if you've been following on Facebook, you will remember scenes, I guess this is now a week, 2 weeks ago, when it was extremely intense. We were getting tons of violent video. And they set up a grand piano in the middle of Taksim Square. And this amazing piano player, name is Klavierkunst, David Martello, Klavierkunst, was there for hours playing this calming, beautiful, powerful music. What a virtuoso he was and how welcome he was and what a strength giver he was. Well, there's a song that he has written, which is so appropriate, called Soldiers of Light, which was written for and about the events that have taken place in Taksim Square. And this is some amazing piano playing. So let's roll with that now. Let's hear a song called, appropriately, Soldiers of Light. Thank you. That was David Martello, Klavierkunst, the brilliant, wonderful, heroic piano player who played for so many in Taksim Square in Turkey. The song is called Soldiers of Light. I want to thank Celeste Lawrence for bringing that to my attention this week. Now, let's go back a little bit, because I'm really trying to pull this together, and I got a feeling you're with me so far. Let's go back to Mr. Snowden, which is a much bigger deal than people have caught on or realized. What the latest with him is that Ecuador has said they can't take him, and that they are justifiably afraid of the ability of the U.S. to exert muscle of one kind or another on Ecuador. Venezuela may be out, but now, as of a few hours ago today, before I lost my internet connection, we had a lightning strike here, so I'm without email. I can't get on Facebook for a while. I noted that it was a Bloomberg story, I believe. Yeah, Bloomberg that said that Mr. Snowden's fate is now in the hands of Russia because nobody can take him. And just a couple of days ago on Facebook, we posted a story was posted from a major news source saying that the Russian parliament, the Duma, has requested that Mr. Snowden testify before the Russian parliament about wiretapping of Russian citizens. Now, after hearing that, it didn't take me too long to remember. I have a long and storied history, and even though I was only 9 years old when this happened, the story of Francis Gary Powers is woven deeply into my life. On May 1, 1960, a CIA U-2 pilot, Francis Gary Powers, he actually went by Frank, was his name. The media added the Gary. It's like Lee Harvey Oswald. I don't know what. But he went by Frank Powers. That's what he was called in the CIA and the Air Force. Francis Gary Powers was shot down by Soviet surface-to-air missiles inside Soviet airspace. CIA was basically overflying Russia, violation of their territory. At high altitude, higher than the Soviet SAMs could reach, and taking great photographs of missile installations. This was under President Dwight Eisenhower and the CIA director, Alan Dulles, one of my least favorites. Anyway, what happened was he had an engine start, and he had to come down to a lower altitude where the oxygen was thinner to restart his engine, not knowing that he had been shorted on liquid hydrogen, which is what was injected into the lean air at those altitudes to allow the U-2 to fly. I'm sure it was well above 100,000 feet. I'd say probably 115,000, 120,000 feet. He had to come down to into the 80,000 range where the Soviet SAM-3s could reach him, and that's what happened. He bailed out. He was captured alive. There was a huge public show trial at a time when President Eisenhower and Nikita Khrushchev were seriously trying to sign a disarmament treaty to literally end the Cold War. And the result of Frank Powers being shot down was this show trial in which, you know, we wound up seeing Nikita Khrushchev pounding his shoe on the table at the UN, and a total reversal and dramatic multi-level escalation in tensions between the Soviet Union and the U.S. No treaty. The arms race was back on full speed. And we have been, I might well argue, in a state of what George Orwell would call permanent war since that time. Frank was exchanged back in a prisoner swap to the U.S. in 64-65. Abel was the Russian spy, and it was done near Checkpoint Charlie in Berlin. Great drama. And Frank Powers returned to Sherman Oaks, where he united with his wife, Sue Powers, who became a very dear friend of mine. We met during the Perot campaign. And he became a news pilot, a helicopter pilot for a local L.A. TV station. And he was killed in 1978, just as he was about to reopen some issues about his shoot-down by a tail rotor separation over Reseda High School. And he crashed and was killed. He was murdered. So, looking at the outcome of that, that is the last time that I can, the only other time I can remember when any American intelligence official testified publicly in Russia. Now it's Russia, was the Soviet Union. But looking at the parallels of that, I shuddered. Now, I can draw several conclusions from that, and that's what we're going to look at for the rest of the show, plus try to weave in this idea about getting everybody on the same page. It's not so much a matter of deciding on a page, but it is a matter of looking for the inertia in the human, in human consciousness, and pushing the inertia in whatever direction it seems to be going. That's probably a really good way to put it, actually. I just came up with that. But looking at the outcome of Frank Powers and the U2 shoot down, we entered a state of permanent war, and I thought, well, maybe that would be absolutely horrible. Putin will move to denounce the United States and go to a major increase in weapons spending in Russia, which will trigger, I mean, if you thought we were in an arms race between 2000 and now, you ain't seen nothing yet. But I am not altogether convinced that that's Putin's motive. Vladimir Putin right now, in my opinion, is the most powerful man in the world. Why is that? Because all of the energy around Snowden has now been disclosed. Of course, this is no secret to anybody, but it's publicly out as the U.S. is pushing for World War III, pushing countries around literally, brutally, with its military power, with its economic power, obviously careening the world toward what would be a nuclear confrontation over Syria and Iran. And the U.S. is an out-of-control totalitarian state. What's more, it's a prima facie case that's proved. And that appears to be what's sinking in. Talking about heroism, digressing. Well, we're going to go to break. So let me do this before we go to break, and we'll pick up on what I was just thinking when we come back. Putin, I believe the United States of America is about to get swarmed. Ecuador's had enough. All of these nations have had enough, and they're starting to stand up openly. And with the outrage of the Snowden revelations, it's a cut-and-dried case that, not so much for us sophisticated listeners, if you will, but for Monpa around the world, it's simple and it's offensive. Everybody's country, everybody's economy is hurting. U.S. has been wiretapping everybody's economic activities, the EU, blah, blah, blah. So I sense clearly that the United States is about to be swarmed, and I also believe that we might see, as a retaliation from this, the dumping of the U.S. dollar, something which has been coming for a long time. So right there, we're at the bottom of the hour. This is Michael C. Rupert, Tracker of Truth, here on the Progressive Radio Network. We will be back with you right after these messages. This is Michael C. Rupert back with you on the Lifeboat Hour here on the Progressive Radio Network. Before we went to break, I was talking about Frank Powers and the U2. Now, the incident, the outcome of that was obviously that the banks got what they wanted. War is the most profitable thing there is. War destruction is not only the most profitable thing there is, and what serves as the foundation for the powers of the old paradigm, war through the nation state. War is also the last, and it will be the last remaining profit center in the zero-sum game of infinite growth. In other words, as we are seeing, as the global economy continues to collapse, accelerated now, exacerbated by horrendous, and I'm afraid to say just beginning, climatological catastrophes, war will be the last business because it's the last profit center. And so whether it happens now or happens later, if the old paradigm is not checked and doesn't crumble, that's where we're going. And, of course, this would accelerate that. But now, what if, though, Putin does something else or Russia does something else with the Snowden revelations? Russia is in a position, probably the only country on the planet right now, aside from Iran, who couldn't go without Russian and Chinese backing, that cannot and will not be bullied by the United States of America, which is now an openly criminal, totalitarian, fascist, illegal bunch of fucking criminals. I'm sorry, that's what the United States government is right now. What if Russia became a central focus point for a global stand against the United States of America? The Snowden documentation being irrefutable, solid, and something that the rest of the world can be on one page about. It is entirely possible that Snowden is a CIA operative sent out by the banks to break this stuff, to precipitate, if you will, a run on the dollar. But what is unique about the situation, and we keep coming back to Russia and Vladimir Putin again, is that Russia has probably not signed on to that plan. And if they have, well, then the old paradigm is going to come down that much more quickly, and we're on the cusp of that anyway. And we are also on the cusp of a global revolution, a global awakening. It's not going to take many more events, no matter how much mainstream media tries to hide it, whether they be in Turkey, in Brazil, in Chile, in Bulgaria, in Canada. It's not going to take many more uprisings happening all at once before something will happen, before the 100th monkey will be reached on that page. But in context with all that, now I want to talk about heroism, because heroism has also been an exceedingly strong theme here. Not only have we seen it all over Taksim Square, we have seen it all over Brazil. We have seen it all over Chile. We have seen it all. We are seeing heroism all over the world, but there have been some amazing examples this week, and I would have had some more links with some sound, but three separate clips of Brazilian police officers or paramilitary just refusing to follow orders, taking off their helmets, sitting down, joining the protesters. This is watershed. This is what the world needs to see, and I'm hearing rumbles of that in a great many other places. In Canada this week, Calgary, I didn't mention that Calgary was also flooded this week, second largest city in Canada. They had to evacuate the city, 75,000 people or something like that. But the RCMP, as reported by Zero Hedge on June 28th, that's just a couple days ago, went into all the houses that had been evacuated and seized all the firearms from those houses on the argument that looters might get them, not mentioning the fact that there's no looters up there, that, you know, it's way up in northern central Canada, and, you know, it's prompting huge outrage that really, because there were the RCMP had set up a blockade preventing 50 residents from walking into the town, you know, cause, and they lived there after having gone to the houses and seized all the weapons. The Canadians did not like that, and they actually got a very quick response from that. But we also have 40 tons of GMO sugar beets that were set ablaze in eastern Oregon. Yahoo! 40 tons of GMO sugar beets. Somebody did something. We also have, in Canada, this is from my dear friend, Allie Maverick Thomas. She posted this link. Midnight confiscation of drilling equipment at New Brunswick anti-fracking protest. The town is called Elsipogtog. Really? Elsipogtog residents confiscated the trucks. These are fracking trucks, towing them to the town reserve where they are being held in custody. You're not fracking on. They've taken it to the next level. I would read more of the story, but unfortunately, I can't get online. So this is what I had saved in a Word document. And I really had a clip that I wish I could have played for you tonight, why I shouldn't work for the USA from Good Will Hunting. Oh, it was a great clip from Matt Damon. I didn't get that into the board tonight. But sticking on this clip of heroism and people standing up, those videos from Brazil were inspiring. But then this week, and I wish I could have played this too tonight, there is a member of the Irish Parliament by the name of Claire Daly. And she stood up this week, and I think this has had like 3, 4, 5 million views by now. Excuse me. She called Barack Obama a war criminal, and in her Irish accent, she was so aflame and wonderful, saying, why don't we just dress our people up in leprechauns and have them running around kissing the Obama's ass? Like, and she was brilliant. She eviscerated in a stunning, fearless speech, calling Barack Obama exactly what he is, a war criminal, calling the United States government a criminal government that terrorizes people. And she was just totally inspiring, one of the finest parliamentary speeches I've ever seen. And that went viral. And then we had a couple of other, well, actually one other thing that really touched me this week, and it has to do again with this theme of heroism. Story of a man named Daniel Summers, S-O-M-E-R-S. He was a veteran of Iraqi freedom. He was Army intelligence. He was part of Task Force Lightning, an intelligence unit in 2004 and 05, and he was assigned to a tactical human intelligence team. That means find them, beat the crap out of them, and get information fast. That's the short version of that, I guess you would say. Find them, interrogate them, sweat them, do whatever you have to do. And he ran more than 400 combat missions in the machine gunner of Humvee. And he worked very closely with CIA and Joint Special Operations Command. And he saw all kinds of atrocities. And he was injured and he was wounded. And he suffered on a great many levels. And he took his own life this week, and it was one of the most eloquent letters I've ever seen. Just Google Daniel Summers. His letter was read in a great many places. And I read a letter from a man who was thinking very, very rationally, who was making a tactical and strategic assessment of his life and the world that he lived in, exercising care for his family, knowing that he suffered from enormous PTSD, he had wounds, he was spiraling down, and he made an incredibly powerful statement. And I know that every veteran out there listening, if you read his letter, you know exactly where he was. And when I finished reading the letter, after I stopped crying, I just I saluted the guy, and I just said, "Rest in peace, brother." He died a warrior's death. His death made a powerful statement, and I'm sure that it touched a great many other wounded warriors out there and a great many of us who appreciate the hell that so many Iraq and Afghani veterans have been made to live with, and which is plainly out of control, because they can see so clearly now that they have been nothing more than part of an out-of-control, ruthless street gang who just beat the crap out of people and killed a lot of people. And his life was going to be troubled. And for some reason, that moved me incredibly. And I salute not only his action and the clarity with which he wrote. I'm reminded of a line from Jack London that said, "I have never seen a wild thing feel sorry for itself." And he was in my mind a free man. He was not feeling sorry for himself. He was biting the bullet, and I send him great respect. On another note, this week, talk about heroism. It was announced quietly, and didn't make a lot of news. It was on NBC Los Angeles. The LAPD has concluded its exhaustive review of the Christopher Dorner case, finding that he was justifiably fired. He was, based on his own complete cover-up, come and gone. And Chris Dorner stands in the same class. He was a veteran, a combat veteran of the war. He was a Riverine. He was an O3, a lieutenant in the Navy, same as a captain in the Army. He had a command. He served honorably. He was a warrior, and he got treated like shit. And I have to tell you guys, you guys know I'm ex-LAPD, but I said it before on this show, that I've spent more time now probably with friends that I have known from the U.S. Army Airborne Special Forces and Navy SEALs and veteran buddies and spook buddies than I did for the 8 years I was around LAPD and the cops I've known since. But any loyalty, any affection that I had for the Los Angeles PD, for LAPD, is gone. You suck. You suck. And I'll stand with my veteran brothers and all the ones who are standing up and concerned about this right now. And that's my side of that. But that's heroism. And there's heroism showing up all over the place right now. And that's a theme. That's a sign that a frequency has been struck. It's a sign that people have been pushed far enough. That's a sign that people are standing up. And that needs to be nurtured as well, because somehow out of all of this, we have to believe. We have to feel. Now, I can feel it. It's not whether I believe it or not. I can feel it, that the human race is reaching frantically, as if in the dark with lights out, groping, to find the same page. And that's really what it is. All we have to do is to get on the same page about something. Let's not debate about what it is. Keep your eyes, your ears, and your hearts to the winds and see where human emotion, where the human spirit is leading. And there are many different directions that we're seeing clearly tonight. And so maybe it's time to come up on time for a second song here. I've got some more inspirational stuff to talk about tonight that's hopefully going to help focus all of this. But for the second song tonight, I am so amazed that, of course, I've been saying it for a long time, that mixing music, mixing art with the heavy stuff is the way to get through this dance, but it's also a way of expressing power. And that goes back to the beauty of the things that I saw at Sundance. Some people who hear it only on one level would tend to be turned off by the fact that small wooden, very small wooden pegs, maybe an inch and a half, 2 inches at the most long, are placed through small holes laterally in the chest muscles of the male dancers. And from what I saw, every male dancer who danced for the 4 days pulled from the tree, and you get tied to the tree of life amidst incredible music and dancing and drumming and support dancing. And I danced support many rounds in the outer ring with those. And it's very clear that the energy that is generated flows into these dancers who are in there. And at a certain point, to symbolize, if you will, an act of prayer, an act of love and devotion, to recognize partly, certainly, the bloodshed by the female in an act of childbirth. For me, it was perceived as being putting my flesh in the game with the prayer, which makes sense to me because Christians, Native Americans doing the Sundance have a little piece of flesh pulled off at the chest and sometimes in the back. I'll talk about that. And everybody goes, oh, that's terrible. And yet what do Christians do? They have the statue of this really, really cool, wonderful guy, this image, who they scourged, whipped, beat with chains, pierced his sides, drove nails through his hands and nails through his feet, and killed him. And then they try to sell everybody else, well, you don't have to put any flesh in the game. He did it for you. Well, there is validity to the saying skin in the game. And I offered myself 4 very small pieces of flesh, about the size of pinpricks, very small, not very painful, but it wasn't not sure it was not painful because I've had injections that hurt worse, or owies that hurt worse, but not painful because I was praying. In other words, I was in a frequency vibration with the dancers and with the music there, and I didn't feel a thing when these 4 tiny little pieces of flesh were cut from my arm and I got to place them below the tree in support of the dancers with my own prayer. But skin in the game means something, and for me, who struggled a lot my whole life, especially with prayer, the experience of having a very sincere prayer from my heart matched with an offering of flesh seemed to convince my soul inside that my prayer had efficacy. And boy, a lot of my prayers were answered. There was enormous power there. and I have complete reverence. I would like to go back next year. I can't commit to the 4-year commitment for Dance. It's too much work, because one of the messages I got out of Sundance was, don't commit to do the Sundance for 4 years. Don't commit to Hanlechia, a vision quest, because you need to listen to all tribes. And if you affiliate too deeply with the traditions of one tribe, not all tribes will either be able to trust you, or you won't be able to hear them all because you're so busy in that. And that was an amazing gift. That was an enormous amount of love. Most beautiful land I've ever seen. So, that being said, I'd really like to go back next year to support. It's just amazing people and more love than you can possibly imagine. And spiritual energy will leave you vibrating if you're at all receptive. So for our second song tonight, I'm pleased, really happy that events have evolved to where this song from our new album, Age of Authority, it, again, fits so well with what's going on, because I like to be integrated as a man, an author, a writer, an activist, and a musician, and an artist as well. I'm pleased to announce that we have some really good reviews coming for the album, Age of Authority. It will be available for sale, for download, from the website New White Trash on July the 7th for $11.11. You get 16 songs. Please buy it, because it's a really good album, and it's a great way to support us at New White Trash and help us get some of the cost back. Very soon, if we get some sales for that and some advance orders for the CDs, we don't have enough money to print CDs yet, but we will. So as soon as we get the songs out and they start to sell, we will have the physical CDs for 2222. Those aren't up yet. And then we will have a sponsor's edition also. And there's some really powerful music here, and I'm grateful that I have this evidence from the universe that what we spent doing the winter, writing over the course of a winter and recording, was intended to be very appropriate for the things that are happening now. My friends, the time has come to see who's holding fucking cards around here. Who's got it, the bad guys or the good guys? Who's got it, the people who are awake or who are not? And there was a message of light from the warriors, about the warriors of light from Taksim Square. And this whole message started about, the whole show tonight started with finding a frequency to get everybody on one page, to hit the note of the tuning fork, which will cause a response in all 7 billion of us. Because I will say this again, once the human race gets on the same page about anything, anything at all, we will lose our fear. Now put that in the context of our new White Trash song from the album Age of Authority, Son of Your Love. Here it is. I wrote it. I sing it. Thanks to Doug Lewis and the whole band. And see how timely it is. Let's go.
Verse of the lie, the one that holds you down and keeps you paralyzed. By now you know the last and first name of the one. Big Brother wraps your fear and burns a shadow in the sun. Son of your love,
in the son of your
love, in the son of your
love.
Arise and then a stall.
shadow's gonna fall. Come to see who's holding cards. For years we've measured life in yard by bloody yard. But now the sun is up and shadows flee in dread. Liberation's dawning, race, see a rainbow sky instead.
Son of Your Love, New White Trash, from the album Age of Authority. You can find those songs. You can listen to any of the songs on the album now. And Chris Vigard has written some amazing songs with some amazing harmonies. We haven't got the masters back on those yet. Mr. Bob Rice, who has mastered us, has just returned from his European tour with Neil Young, so he's going to finish our album now. It's a quality problem. We will get the masters up soon, but you can listen to any of them now. There's some killer songs there at newwhitetrash.com, newwhitetrash.com. Really looking forward to getting this album out. And you know what? I think you all ought to buy it. I think it's well worth it, and I think it's sending the right message in the right place. So I'm still here, and so we're all still here, and we are trudging this road. Now, I'm excited. I'm excited. I'm on the edge of my chair. I will be watching very closely this week, primarily for incidents of civil unrest around the world, major economic developments. I'm really kind of sniffing that a run on the dollar, that a major blow to the U.S. economy is coming, and I got a feeling that Edward Snowden, recognized now as an agent of a former agent of U.S. economic and military imperialism, has delivered a cut-and-dried case of the overt, complete criminality of the U.S. government to the world, to a world which is ready to act upon it. There are things happening behind the scenes, but what he did was good, and we'll take it and run with it. But we're watching all of this now for signs of the human race arriving on the same page. Any page, pick one. That's the tuning fork. We get together on one page, and we lose our fear. And then anything becomes possible. This is Michael C. Rupert, Tracker of Truth. I am really glad to be with you guys. I'll be back with you with internet and everything next week. But we still got it done. So let's stay on the road. Keep our eyes open. I'm your scout. I'll see you next week. Good night.